Jesus is a rule breaker. I think I have to remind myself this every single time that we discuss our very important rules, which we all must follow without any exception whatsoever. Jesus is a rule breaker, and he wants us to worry less about the rules and more about who we are becoming. Rules about Sabbath, rules about who are those who get to heal people, rules about who to love, rules about who is on the team, rules about who is cast out, rules about who is perfect in the eyes of God. Over and over again, Jesus says we're playing with the wrong set of rules. Or more precisely, we're missing the point of the rules. You know how when you're playing Monopoly and then you land on any utility, like the electric company and the water, and you have to pay that fine, that $75, and you put that $75 in the middle of the board, right? And so then you play around a few times, and then when someone lands on free parking, they get to collect all that money from the center of the board, right? You know, that's not actually a rule. It never was a rule. It's not how the game is actually played. It's a rule that everyone I've ever known has played that game with. And I think we like it because we think there's supposed to be some sort of lottery, that there's some sort of way to get lucky in the game. But that's not what the game's designer had in mind, the game's creator, just like our creator wanted to show us how evil it is to drive our neighbors into bankruptcy. This confusion we have over this rule of free parking is how Jesus seems to come at these types of moments. These rules we're living by aren't the real rules. They're the rules that you and I play with because you and I like them. And let's be honest, they benefit you and I. God, on the other hand, has a different approach to rules. After commissioning his disciples in chapter 6, naming them apostles, and teaching them about love, Jesus began to show them what love looks like in chapter 7, right? He helped the centurion slave, breaking a rule about healing a Gentile. Then he raised a widow's son from the dead to restore her to community, because the rules turn a loving neighbor into an outcast. The rules meant to protect her let her slip through the cracks. So then the lectionary skips over what is some really important text. Right. Essentially, what happens next in chapter 7 is that Jesus goes on healing a bunch more people, and his name becomes better known, and he gets noticed by more people. And so John the baptizer starts to get a little nervous, and so he sends his disciples to find out the real scoop on Jesus, right? Is this the man, right? So he sends them there, and they ask him right straight up this ultimatum, are you the man, right? Or do we have to keep waiting for the man to come? And Jesus responds by pointing out his work and essentially says, the proof is right here. The proof is here in what I'm doing. He says, watch, see. Then Jesus turns to the people as John's disciples go away, and he starts to talk to them about John and about this opportunity that has come to see who and what God is doing in the midst and how they are missing it. They are missing it with John, and John's disciples are missing it with Jesus, and John is missing it with Jesus. Because they all think that it is about this one person, This one person, a single Messiah, sent out to care for everyone, to do all of it himself, or to inspire them and lead them into some titanic battle. But those thoughts are proof that they've missed the signs. So then Jesus goes to this man's house for dinner. That's where we pick it up. Goes to this man's house for dinner, and he proceeds to humiliate the man at his own dinner party and raise up this disreputable woman, declaring her sins are forgiven. Rules again. Don't you know what kind of woman she is? He thinks. I read recently that that's what the only time we get these internal monologues is it comes from these elites when they're pondering who is Jesus. To this Pharisee, this woman, she's an outsider. She isn't one of them anymore. She is to be cast out because of what she did, because of what she does. If not literally, then relationally, emotionally. Right? Those are the rules, and she broke them. So lock her up, throw away the key to our hearts anyway. Even if God says to love her like a neighbor. Of course, the question I've always had when we get into the story is where did she come from? How did she get into this private party? Was there a rear door that only she and the host knew about? For he certainly knows what kind of woman she is. So what is she doing there if she's not welcome there? So then she proceeds to touch Jesus, a word associated in the Gospels with healing. And then weeping, tears raining upon his feet. This isn't a quiet sniffling in the corner of with a notorious woman who knows her place, but the disruptive wailing of a woman seeking profound intimacy, begging to be seen and respected. She sees Jesus, she knows him, and so she touches him and weeps upon him, wetting his feet with her rain-like tears. This is the image we get today. This woman at this dinner party. So Jesus, in the midst of this, turns to this man and says to him, staring him right in the face, he asks, do you see her? Do you see this woman? Now, of course, he doesn't mean literally, for her presence, we know, is driving this man crazy. He's worried about his ritual purity and his social standing, how she's ruining this party, but more important, what's going to happen to him with her presence there. He's worried about what people will think of him and what they can do to him. Of course, he sees the source of his discomfort. She's made herself impossible to miss. But does he see her? Does he see the woman, the human being, the one pushed into the street by a system which earlier drove another woman out of a city? And into the gutter, right? Because her son had died. Does he see her humanity? Well, what do you think? The answer is revealed immediately when Jesus tells a parable about forgiveness. And the man can't see the parallel, really. He cannot see that he is that man, the one to which little will be given. Then Jesus lets this woman be the other half of that parable. For the host did not bother to give Jesus water at the table, but she brought water to the table, making it with her tears. He didn't greet Jesus with a kiss, but she would not stop kissing him. He did not anoint his head, but she anointed his feet with oil. Right? He could not even treat Jesus like a decent guest, but she opened her heart to him like a lover. So this man, so desperate to be respected, worried about who he is and how he is seen by society, is being shamed in his own home by Jesus, shamed for being self-absorbed and demeaning this woman whose only crime in the story is to be one of those people. She's the kind of other spoken of in euphemisms and oblique language, and not an insider given respect and dignity. He cannot see her, and he cannot see Jesus, because he treats Jesus not as an honored guest or a prophet, calls him teacher, a lower expression here, and doesn't even do those respectful things, those precious rules of respect Jews are commanded even to give to strangers. But she is seen. She's seen by God, by Jesus, by his followers. In Mark's parallel, Jesus says remarkably, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. She is the model of the gospel. She's its vision and personification. Right? She, see her. Then, when Jesus leaves, the writer highlights the place of women in this movement. From the poor to the wealthy, as mothers, as proclaimers, supporting and bankrolling, right? See them. Do we see her? The women of our world whose bodies are used like toys and are thrown away when emptied. The women who seek justice and yet greater sympathy is shown to the men who abuse them. The women who strive and suffer and weep for their babies and cry out in the streets and say, not one more baby stolen from us. So many women in our country, in our world, like Rachel, weeping for her children, she refused to be consoled because they are no more. Do we see her? Are we so afraid that we just do the easy rather than easily do the just? Do we see her when she is building up the movement? When she is respecting the disrespected? When she is serving food in the soup kitchen and giving blankets to the homeless? Do we see her in her accomplishments and her gifts? Do we see her when she breaks the very rules Jesus commands her to break? This is once again about the kingdom. The beauty in this exchange is not only that this woman can see Jesus, that she knows who he is when these men can't, but that her faith and witness to Jesus is proof that her sin, her separation from God, remember, is already gone. It was erased before this. That these men can't see it, thinking Jesus is breaking rules just to break rules, shows how little of the kingdom they see. So may we see these women and all of God's work they are doing already, all the sin being forgiven, all the hope they are creating in our homes and in our streets. May we see the kingdom and its work of forgiveness, of new life, born to, supported by, and given in revolutionary love by women from all walks of life. And may we see God's handiwork throughout creation, welling up in those great wails for mercy, in hearts bursting with love, and through the touch of hands marked for healing with intimacy and respect. Amen.